Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Meet Dr. Chad Overman, Director of Vision Benefits at Delta Dental of Iowa and independent optometric consultant. As a licensed optometrist and corporate executive, Chad has built his career helping payers recognize eye care professionals as key partners and representing their needs and interests of the optometric profession at higher levels. His knowledge, skills, and expertise span a multitude of specialties, including practice management, budgeting, publishing, talent recruitment, and professional relations. Hey, Chad, how are you?
I'm great, Iqbal. How are you doing?
Fantastic, man. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
I appreciate you having me.
Excellent. Well, I know you for many, many years, but I know that my audience may be new to you. So why don't you take a moment and just share with us a little bit about what you do and how does it impact healthcare?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm an optometrist, educated as an optometrist. We'll just say 25 plus years. Let everybody realize, I'm younger than I look, maybe. I've been, the last 5 years, I've been a consultant in the optical industry. So I took all those relationships that I built over the first 20 years and have been a consultant for lots of different companies. And I usually try and keep three or four companies on a regular basis. That tends to keep me busy enough. And they're all focused on, the patient. How do we do better for the patient than we have before? It may be, through their equipment or their insurance offering. Everybody does something a little different. The really cool part that I like is when I can put multiple clients together in a project and use the strengths of both of them or three of them to really move something forward. But I think if you always stay patient-centric, everybody wins in the end. And, obviously that's the goal is for the patient to win. Companies will win, if they keep that in mind. So it's really patient oriented is what my entire career has been about, I suppose.
Very good. And, I've seen you in that role, Chad, and I've seen how you engage with different groups to be able to pull their strengths and combine them in a way that elevates the patient outcome. Talk to me a little bit about maybe the biggest problem today that you, your company is working on to solve. That's really a pressing factor, a pressing issue in what you're seeing.
Yeah, so in the optical world, it's getting people to have yearly eye exams. We know, or everybody realizes they should go to the dentist, twice a year. In the optical world, that has not come to fruition. And so I spend a lot of time educating insurance brokers who sell vision plans, why people should have vision insurance because they're two times more likely to have an eye exam. Because I talk about the things that we can find in a regular eye exam, the diabetes, the hypertension, the list goes on and on. I could take up our whole time today on that list. But getting people to understand why they need to have the exam, and then probably the biggest, to answer your question, the pressing issue is access. You know, I live in the state of Iowa. There are 99 counties in Iowa. And when I do a heat map of providers for vision, I come up with 63 of those 99 counties do not have enough providers. So access is gigantic.
And let me clarify that. So you're telling me that in your heat map, there's like, well, I mean, like, I'm trying to visualize this. You're telling me that they're all concentrated in one area and the rest of the state is basically healthcareless.
Well, I mean, we'll say underserved, okay? They may have a provider somewhere in the county, but if that is maybe in the county seat and, you know, a person has to drive an hour one way to get to that provider and there's nothing towards the other counties that they could go to, how many people are going to do that on a regular basis? You know, they'll find their grocery store they go to on a regular basis, but they find a market that's close for that. They're only going to go maybe to that county seat once a month, or, and then what if that doctor, that provider is so busy, they can't get in on a schedule that works. So Iowa's not unlike a lot of states, but we are very, you know, we're centralized population-wise in three different cities, basically. And if you don't live in one of those, that's where that heat map comes in, and you just don't have access. I'm working with multiple clients of mine that are into how do we improve access to healthcare. You know, if I practiced for many years, Iqbal, and I may have been the only doctor that some people saw. Now,
ever?
Well, they don't go, if they don't go to their dentist as often, but they don't go, you know, we know lots of people don't go get regular checkups. So oftentimes it's the optometrist, because we're the only ones that can look at those small blood vessels in the back of the eye and see early disease processes before they really take hold, so we can catch it early. Obviously, the outcome's better then. But again, if we don't get them in for the eye exam, that disease process just takes hold, and we know how much worse the outcome is going to be every year that goes by. So I boil it all down to the access. If we can make the access better, we'll get people in, because we'll make it easier for them. You know, people across the country and the world are about give it to me now. I want it now and I want it on my time. Now, I'm not a big proponent of the online eye exams. That's not what I'm talking about. I do want them to be seen. There's a lot more things that can be done. I want full comprehensive eye exams. So there's a rift in the optometry community about
I want to clarify just one thing for the listeners today. When you're talking about like remote eye exams, can you just give a quick overview of what that is for somebody that's naive to that?
Absolutely. So there's some companies that are developing more refractions, so they can come up with the spectacle prescription. And sometimes that can be done from your home. Now, that can be good, but if you look at it from a patient perspective, again, we're not protecting the patient in that regard. Yes, they can get glasses so that they can see, and maybe there's an emergency, they have a high prescription, they need a pair of glasses to go about their day. I get that. That's fine. But we won't see all of those health problems that I just mentioned. And that's where I feel those aren't as patient-centric as they should be. So I'm talking more about a full comprehensive eye exam. A lot of what I do is telemedicine now. So, you know, that's a big part of what a lot of the companies I work with, that's how we're increasing access. But it's telemedicine with a full comprehensive eye exam. So it's fun. I absolutely love what I do. I mean, it's incredible that I get to do what I do, and I enjoy it every day.
Yeah, you seem to be very passionate on this topic, and it's really good to see that. I think a lot of the listeners today may be a little surprised that optometrists have that ability to, I don't want to say forecast, right? But they can diagnose and detect diseases earlier, which is probably what most people don't even recognize, is that if you have a provider in your area that can do that, the reactive healthcare system that exists today is broken. We all know that. Like everyone's just going like, oh, suddenly I've been diagnosed with X or Y, and now we have to take this medication. But early detection and access to healthcare are critical. And I'm sure that the clients that you're working with today who see that, recognize that, and you're helping them in that space. You know, Chad, because I've known you for so long, like we've had so many great conversations, and we always typically, focus on or start to project about what the world will look like in the future. Give me an idea, like, you know, from your perspective of the world, like how do you see optometry changing, adapting, or morphing over the next 5 years to maybe even address these issues that we're talking about today?
Yeah, and that's my goal in the rest of my career is to help make those changes. You know, I've always said I want a seat at the table, right? Be able to help make some of those decisions. So hopefully that's what I'm doing now and what I'll continue to do. I would say in the next 5 years, we have to do a couple of things in optometry. We've really had a lower number of applicants to optometry schools. So we have to build that pipeline, and the schools are working on that. But there's not as many of the students, you know, the high school students, the college students that understand that optometry is available and what optometry can do for a career. So we have to do a better job with that, because right now we have a shortage of providers, optometrists across the country. Now, if you're a practitioner in a location and you've been there, you may not want competition to come in near you, and you may not agree with what I just said. But the fact is, we do not have enough graduates coming out of optometry school to take care of the population that we have. You know, as we get older, we have a lot more problems. So we've got to do something to create that pipeline. Now, on the flip side, I'll go back to the access, because I don't see that many new graduates wanting to go to rural Iowa, or, you know, fill in the blank, you know, somewhere. You know, you and I, Iqbal, worked in an industry where we had to find providers for some of these locations, right? And it's just not possible. I mean, unless they're from that hometown and want to go back there, you won't get anyone there. So that I see is a problem we've got to fix in the next 5 years. And that's where I'm working on some pilots and some different projects with telemedicine, because we've got to be able to reach the people where they're at. Now, again, I'm not saying necessarily in their home, but in a location that, you know, maybe is only 20 minutes from their house versus an hour, we've got a better likelihood of getting them there. And then we got to increase the number of hours, especially the hours that people want to be seen. I do a lot of consulting for private practice offices as well. And when I walk in there and I look at their schedule and they leave at 4:30 or 5 o'clock every single day, well, what number of people are they actually leaving out, you know, that have to work, cannot get off work until 5 o'clock? So I always suggest, you know, what about at least one day that you work until 7, or, you know, something like that. So I think we're missing the boat on a lot of these patient populations, sometimes just by the hours that we keep. So I think over the next 5 years, we've got to increase the pipeline of quality optometrists, and we absolutely have to increase the access again. So I know I'm kind of a broken record on that, but I'm very passionate about that access to comprehensive eye exam.
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing, Chad. I think, honestly, sometimes the message has to be repeated multiple times in order to penetrate, you know, what we're misconceptions or preconceived notions already are. You know, one of the things that I'm, you know, most of my listeners may be thinking, like, you know, I'm watching this consultant and one of his clients is Delta Dental, right? Like, it's not an automatic connection. Like, why would a dental insurance plan be working with an optometrist? For what value? And you've mentioned this earlier in this conversation, there's 99 counties with a very large disparate, you know, geography. Like, what are some of the things, and again, if you're able to speak to this, it'll be fantastic, but like, what are some of the things that you see as challenges for this client that, you know, for Delta Dental, that you're able to help them overcome in the conversations? Like, how does, again, that synergy between dental and optical isn't really that obvious. So maybe help us understand what that looks like and how that works.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And it goes to a point that I have been kind of fighting in the state of Iowa. So Delta Dental of Iowa is the parent company, very large in Iowa with dental. They are kind of the number one, you know, in Iowa for dental. They have a vision product. Okay, so they're not just dental. They've actually had Delta Vision of Iowa for over 10 years now, probably a little bit more than that actually now. And so I've been with them for about 2 years to try and promote the vision side of their business. Now, they're a long ways from the dental side of their business. You know, they're other companies we've worked with, you know, pharmacy and vision, the differences in size there. Well, this is a very big difference in size for them, but they're growing. And as a consultant, you know, I almost have to be careful what I say to them because they'll go do it. And, you know, you got to be very serious about, you know, what you can't think of today. You got to think of, you know, a year down the road and further when you're a consultant, how is this going to play out? And they've been wonderful. They've been doing things. I've always wondered as an optometrist, you know, why do insurance companies do this or do that? This would be better for the patient. So again, I've stayed patient-centric and they're doing the things that I think is best for the patient. They have a diabetic rider that, you know, as a diabetic, you can have more eye exams. You can have more retinal photos. It's to keep that diabetic coming back more regularly so that we can make sure that there's tight control. Children, always been a big passion of mine. I've never understood why we would give a child a pair of glasses in January. They use their vision benefits to get a pair of glasses. And then we know children's vision change rapidly. So by the time they start school in August, that pair of glasses doesn't even work to see the chalkboard anymore. So we're saying, no, you have to wait until January comes back around. Well, I've consulted with Delta and they have a rider for children as well. And they're putting a lot of it just in their normal benefits package, but it is technically a rider. But it says that a child can have another exam during the year and they can get new lenses into that frame that they got in January so they can actually see the board. You know, it's something that seems so simple, but there's a cost to it, right? And I'm very careful of, you know, what am I suggesting and how costly is it for my client? But it comes down to that child. And one of the best parts of my job ever is to see that child put on a pair of glasses that they can see there's leaves on a tree from across the street.
Yeah.
And to think they're going all year or half the year without being able to see clearly, it's just not fair. So I don't know why everybody doesn't do it, but that's a goal of mine. If you start something and it's a smart thing to do, the competition will catch up eventually. So it's little things like that.
I mean, I think that's a great call out, Chad. I mean, for the listeners that are listening today, like some of them are moms and dads that have kids, and that's not something that's automatically comes to mind. Like you're just sort of like, this is the way it is. And so our child will be fine from January until December. And then in January, the next year, well, that's when the changes happen. But, you know, when you know, my kid had issues when he was younger too. And you know, understanding that glasses changed his life when he was able to see properly, like was a game changer for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that you've, you know, been able to bring your insights to an insurance organization that can see the value in that, and then the value that it brings to the patient. I mean, it's huge. And again, we're talking access to care and we're talking about so many of these changes, but you know, it's the impact of these policies, is the impact of the structural formats that we're talking about that really resonate with, you know, a lot of people, that they suddenly stop and go, like, what am I doing this for? Or why are we talking about this? It's because at the end of the day, you know, patients' lives matter. And if we're not able to help improve that with this kind of conversation, that's a miss. So really Absolutely. Good to hear that.
There's so many things that, you know, people and organizations do just because they've always done it. And that's not always the right answer. You know, it's like, why? And what are you doing to make improvements? And that's what I get to do as a consultant. And that's why I say I have fun every day, and I get to think of these things. And then, you know, anytime you take something to an organization, you've got to have it thought out and, you know, get them to understand and buy in. But that one's for the children and the diabetics, you know, it was wonderful how quickly they got it. You know, they understood and they're like, really, why aren't we doing that? So that's very fun.
Awesome. Chad, for those that are listening, like, you know, I'm sure that there's somebody listening today that's like, hey, listen, what, you know, over the next few years, I want to work towards that level where Chad is. Like, how does one prepare for the role that you're in today? There's no structured process to my understanding, right? Like, you don't go to an MBA program and like, this is how you will be a consultant, but you've had such an amazing career. But like, what are some of the things that you feel are critical for somebody to move into a consulting role, or even to work for a larger, you know, organization like Delta Dental, and how to be able to marry these two concepts together?
Yeah, I do get that question once in a while, even from my kids and my niece and nephew, and I had a long conversation about that too. And there is no quick way, okay? You have to put in the time. But I think if you look at different opportunities, you know, I left very successful practices that I'd started and I'd run for, you know, monetarily what was maybe half of what I was making. But I felt I could make a difference if I learned new skills, I did different things. You know, one of my favorite thoughts from one of my mentors was he started out small as a pediatrician in one office. And then he moved to a hospital that had 300 beds. And then his next role was actually with a state government. So he took care of a whole state. And then he went national. And so the whole point here is that each step he made in his career, he wanted to touch more lives. And I have absolutely, you know, taken that to heart and said, every role that I take, I want to be able to make a bigger difference. And I think as you do that and you look at that and you're not afraid to take some chances, take some risks into a role that, you know, maybe isn't the one you thought you would take, but you're going to build a lot of relationships. And I've said that earlier in our talk here, relationships are the key to what I do right now. As I went along, I think, you know, you hear the saying, don't burn bridges, right? Well, that's absolutely true, but why not build bridges as you go? So you're not burning anything down, you're actually building things up, because you never know who you're going to work with in the future. I'll say, you know, if you're at a lower level in a company, you never know who's going to be your next boss. You know, it's possible that person sitting right next to you on your team right now. So you network with them, you network with others, you find mentors that are going to really put time and effort into you. And then 25 years later, you find yourself, you know, that here you are. But I think if you do those type of things, you'll be set up to have more choices. And if one of your choices down the road is to be a consultant, then you'll have that opportunity. Like I say, it's a great opportunity, but it does not come overnight. It takes a while.
I think that that's, you know, one thing that I'm hearing more and more that's missing from certain professionals, not like a category of professionals like optometrists or pharmacists or nurses, but just like the next generation across the board, which is, you know, they're taught very strategically the information that's required for them to practice. That's important, right? Like you have to have the foundations of, you know,
pass the boards
and kinetics, and in your case, and for optometry, like all the basic things to be able to do your job well. But it's not going to help you get to the next level. Like those clinical factors are always going to be there, but that's not going to be what it is that helps you get promoted or recognized as a leader. It is the relationship building. It is the conversations. It's the continuous helping other people. And like you pointed out, like 25 years later, you know, karma comes back in a phenomenal way.
Yep, I agree. It's the soft skills you need to work on as much as anything. And, you know, I would say the one mentor I had in optometry school that really opened my eyes, he said it doesn't take any more effort to be nice. And I that has stuck with me. That, you know, I hope, and I'm not saying everybody that's ever worked with me would say I'm the nicest guy in the world, because you have to make some tough decisions, and, you know, not everybody's going to agree with what decisions you make, but as long as you have a good foundation and a reason for making that decision. But I think, you know, if we step back and, you know, we find something that's positive about someone that we're working with or the organization that we're working with, I think it goes a long way. And I want people to focus on that aspect of their life a little bit too. You know, it, in my world, it hasn't been you step on people on the way up. I don't believe in that, you know, at all. I think you need to lift people up as you go the best you can. You know, and that's where, you know, if you're in a place to be a mentor for somebody, I think you should. You know, I know you help a lot of people, Iqbal, with what you do. Those are the type of people that I like to be around, you know, like to surround myself with and who I want to be. And you'll find out more often than not that, call it karma, whatever you want to call it, it leads to more success and happiness down the road.
Love it. And you're absolutely right. Like I'm very indebted to the people that helped me get to where I am today. And, you know, you're one of the people that I think of in that category where I'm like, you were somebody that I just wanted to follow wherever I could.
Hey, likewise, the feeling's the same. You know, awesome. You don't have to, you know, I've been a mentor to someone that I would consider higher up the ranks than me. I've been a mentee for someone that would be considered lower in the ranks than me. You can learn something from everyone if you put the time and effort into it. So don't look at the org chart to decide who you want to be your mentor. It doesn't hurt to have the CEO or the president or somebody as your mentor. Don't get me wrong. But that shouldn't be your only goal. There's multiple people, and you shouldn't just keep one mentor for your whole life. You know, you need to change and grow and learn from other people.
So Chad, you've talked a couple of life lessons here, right? You've talked about building relationships. You've talked about, you know, mentoring others and giving back. And, you know, a lot of the listeners today are looking to be able to advance their career. So in addition to those two, like what is another, maybe one of your top three pieces of advice that you can give to the listeners that helps them recognize, like, hey, I want to take my career from here to here. I'll focus on building, you know, relationships. I'll focus on mentoring and helping others. Is there a third piece that you would say, like, this is really what's helped me be successful in my roles?
Yeah, I think I'd probably steal from Wayne Gretzky there that, you know, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And to build on that, if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. You're not innovating. You're not putting yourself out there enough. I have failed more times than I care to really count. But that's made me who I am. And that's what I think you got to put the work in, right? I mean, it's a day to day. You got to put the work in. But what else could you be doing? Build relationships. You know, maybe you come up with a pilot project that, you know, is your idea that you take to whomever. You got to get noticed. But a lot of people are afraid to put themselves out there. They're afraid if they stick their neck out, they're going to get it cut off. And yeah, something may go wrong, right? But if you put the work in, usually that outcome, even if it's bad, it's not that bad. It's not going to be a career killer or anything like that. But you have to try those different things. And you've got to, I've used the word in a lot with my clients, how do you differentiate yourself? You know, if you're up against 10 other people for that promotion, what makes them want to pick you versus those others? It's got to be something that differentiates you in that regard. So, you know, when we'd go to, I'll put it back into the pharmacy world for just a little bit. I was a pharmacy recruiter, as you know, and I would go to a school and they would walk around 15, 20 together at a time, and they all wanted to a job in the same city. And so I would turn it on them and say, well, how are you going to beat them? Because they all want your job. And it was funny because after a while, I'd see them start dispersing. They would be more in groups of two or three because, you know, it started hitting like, oh, yeah, I have competition out there. So I guess, you know, that's a long-winded way to say, you know, put yourself out there, differentiate yourself. Try different things. You know, that's what's going to get you noticed, and that's what's going to elevate your career. You better have built those relationships, though, as well. That's something that, you know, even if you don't get that job, you want to go back and say, why didn't I get that job? You know, and if you have somebody, a mentor or somebody that you can talk to about that, you can take positives away from not getting a particular role, so that maybe you don't make the same mistakes next time, or you say something differently, or you work on yourself, you know, from now until then. And then you'll find, you know, those roles start happening, and maybe you're the one that starts getting tapped on the shoulder a little bit more than having to go through all of those interview processes.
Yeah, it definitely speeds things up from that perspective. And I totally agree. You know, what's really interesting though, right? Like, because I think I want to go back to a point that you made earlier. Like, you know, we've talked about building relationships. We've talked about investing in others. And now we're talking about risk-taking behavior, right? Like, be risky, push yourself, put yourself out there. And it's really hard for the listening audience when they are healthcare professionals that recognize, hey, you know, as a healthcare professional only, like, follow these protocols. Like, if you see this diagnosis, this is the prescription that needs to be written and dispensed. Or if you, you know, catch this particular, you know, during a refraction, like, this is the diagnosis that's been made. Like, you're trained to follow, like, you're trained and indoctrinated into the way that it needs to go. And now we're saying, yeah, but in order to be successful, you need to take risks. And I think a lot of healthcare professionals like have a difficult time working with that. Now, I know what you're saying, right? So how do you coax someone to break that boundary that they've built around them? Like, oh, this is the safe zone. Like, I'm a healthcare professional. I'm an optometrist, a nurse, a pharmacist, and I know what to follow, right? So I'm always going to be safe, but I'm never going to get out of these walls. Like, how do you help them bust through that?
Yeah, I mean, we're all scientists, right? At heart, because we do what we did through school. And so I completely agree with you. It's hard. I think making small goals, you know, I'm kind of cliche here, right and left, I realize, but I do believe in writing your goals down. I believe in telling your goals to other people, because it's the mentors in my life that didn't do what I personally do were the most helpful because they had a different perspective. And if I was to write down my goals or tell my goals to them, they could kind of, you know, help me out, say, well, that may be too big of a goal for that short term. That's more of a long-term goal. And I found that as I built those goals to whatever it is that I wanted to do down that road, I changed. I became a little different person, and I wasn't so much like the one that you just described that was, you know, in my bubble. But I got different experiences that way work-wise. And there was a lot of times I was in meetings. I'm like, why am I here? I don't understand why I'm here. And I look back on that now and think about all of the things I learned from the people that were in those meetings by just listening. You know, we don't always do a great job of listening, you know, and I was this way, you know, early on, because you're thinking the whole time you're with a patient, you're thinking of what the diagnosis might be, even when you don't have all of the information yet. And so their mouth is moving, but you're thinking so much up here that you're not really hearing them. And so you start changing a little bit at a time, start listening a little bit more, listening to others, broaden your circle. You know, we all have circles of influence, and however close, you know, someone is, I try and get someone outside of that circle, because I think that's what grew me more as a business person. And, you know, it's great that you have an MBA. I say I kind of have a life MBA on some things. Anywhere other than, you know, you got some experiences out of it. But I think that's what you have to do. If you want something different, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over. So it's little steps. And that's why I say it takes a long time, but you've got to start changing your mindset a little bit if you don't want to do what you're doing. You know, there's people that have great careers, 30, 40 years doing the same thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But if it's something you want to do differently, you have to do something differently. You got to prepare for it. I'm a big make the plan and then work the plan. You know,
Chad, let me ask that and like a piggyback to that, right? Like, you know, a lot of people, they are only exposed to a small sliver of what executive leadership might look like, or, you know, director level positions. How does one explore what's really out there? Like, you as a consultant, like, you've done so many things. I'm going to go back and ask you in a moment, like, what probably your most professional, proudest professional achievement is. But, you know, for somebody that's like a 5-year practitioner, like, maybe like they've just gotten good at what they do with patients, but they want to be able to take that skill set one step higher and work with large companies like Delta Dental and a lot of other clients that you have. How does one even begin the process of exploring what's available?
So probably starting to look at what KOL, key opinion leader, possibilities are out there. Most companies have it, larger companies. You know, Bausch & Lomb is a company that I was a key opinion leader for many years. They'll get you out of your daily practice. Sometimes they'll fly you somewhere. They'll have you come, you know, do a presentation somewhere. Try and work on your speaking abilities and your skills. You know, I know Toastmasters is a big part of your life. Do those things that will get you, you know, the skills to be able to be a key opinion leader. You need at least 5 years in practice. I think that's minimum, because, you know, why is a company going to want to come to someone as a key opinion leader if you haven't had enough time to build key opinions? So that's why I say it takes some time, but there's lots of those opportunities out there. I mean, there's every company that I know has something like that. If you want to work with a particular company and say they make gadget XYZ, well, becoming an expert at gadget XYZ would be a great way to eventually be a key opinion leader for that company. So those are the probably the easiest ways to start networking. Go to conferences, ask people questions. You know, the booths that are set up at a conference, you know, people like to walk by and not make eye contact, right? But they're missing out on that networking possibilities or just questions about, you know, Iqbal, who would I talk to in your company that oversees this? Well, you're probably going to give me a name, you know, and so then you can say, well, I was at a conference, I met Iqbal and he gave me your name. I would love to, you know, have a 30-minute conversation with you. So those are little things, you know, that can get your foot in the door, but too many people sit and wait for them to come to you. Well, what have you done to differentiate yourself for them to come to you? It's not that they won't, but the odds aren't as good unless you've put yourself out there first.
So that's such a good call out. I mean, I think that you and I have been to enough national, regional conferences where we're surrounded by 10,000 attendees. And a lot of them really just simply choose to look down and walk past because they're afraid. And it's almost a telltale sign. Like, you know, that this is an individual that really is very more self-conscious or subconscious about their own failings. And so that's what's going to be representative. But the ones that come up to you, the ones that ask you some thought-provoking or even just interesting question and the ability to start that relationship, like I have gone out of my way to be like, hey, I need you to meet so-and-so. Like I will pull them. I'd be like, hey guys, I'll be back. Take this person, go find like the regional or the divisional that was at the conference. I'd be like, you really need to meet Jack. Jack is just a really cool guy. And that's how these things start. But yeah, I think a lot of times people are so focused on their own infallibility or their own inadequacy that they manifest that out too much. Don't be like that, right? Like, listen to Chad. Chad's telling like the spot on truth. Like, ask a question, interact. And I know that we're living in a, you know, a pandemic slash post-pandemic world, but there's still virtual fairs. There's still virtual conferences. Sure. People are still chatting online. I mean, I've had people that, you know, ask a series of like 3-4 questions and I'm like, who is this guy or who's this girl? I want to get to know this person more, and I'll take them offline and ask them more questions and we can develop something there. So that's really phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, showing that confidence, you know, that there's enough people, and then, you know, I won't necessarily put it on one age group, but you know, if you haven't learned to be confident, you know, as you're younger, it's a hard thing to do to put yourself out there. But just asking a couple well thought questions, like you said, shows that confidence. And then that person can learn, you know, what kind of conversationalist are you? And I mean, you know, you and I can learn a lot about someone in a 5-10 minute conversation. And it may not be specifics about them, but it's their confidence, their tone, their thought process, their decision-making, you know, all of that is extremely important. But if you walked by me and didn't say a thing, I don't know you're there. And so, you know, those people are the ones that I tend to be a little more harsh on when they ask me, what can I do to be XYZ? I'm like, well, what have you done? You know, and so you got to be ready for some hard truths once in a while when you have a mentor. But that's their role, is to not pat you on the back and say you're the best that's ever been. It's where can you improve?
Yep. And you've done a lot, Chad. Like I've watched your history and career, and you've done so many different things. And I don't want to be the one to be able to say all of them, right? Because I think that there's people that want to talk to you, and we'll hopefully we'll get a chance to do that afterwards. But when you think and reflect on your career and all the different opportunities that you had, the achievements you've had, like what is the one thing that sticks out to you the most as your proudest achievement?
That is a tough, tough question. I know that's what you're here for, is to ask those tough ones. You know, normally any supervisor I've ever had would say I'm not very good at bragging upon myself. And, you know, to me, the best achievement is the next one, you know, that I'm going to make. But that would be not answering your question, and I'm not wanting to do that. I was Doctor of the Year for Walmart at one point for the country. So that I thought it was based a lot on my patient care and how I took care of the community and stuff. That one felt good. I got to admit that. I would say most of the other ones, Iqbal, are what my teams have helped me accomplish. You know, I was one that helped build a vision benefit for 1.2 million Walmart associates. And I was told by many higher ups that it probably would have failed if it wasn't, you know, for myself and for what my team did. That felt good. You know, it's again, it's broadening. I could always help one patient at a time. You know, optometrists sit in the dark a lot, right? You know, and we're in the dark with one person at a time. So when you can broaden that and you can make an impact, you know, there's of those 1.2 million associates, I'm sure there's lots of stories that, you know, something was found that they were taken care of. Most of my other successes really would be one patient at a time. You know, I had one patient that I sent to the emergency room immediately, and he had quadruple bypass surgery 2 hours later. You know, those are the things that get me amped up. You know,
wait,
I know that's not exactly
that
your
while
question.
He was in your chair?
Well, I mean, it was very obvious looking in the back of his eyes that there was a hypertensive crisis going on. Took his blood pressure, and I don't remember the numbers right now exactly, but it was ridiculous. And, you know, that's one where you don't send them, you call the ambulance. Wow. And so we did. And the only reason I really knew the outcome is he came back to me 3 or 4 months later and told me the story and thanked me for saving his life. And so those are the ones that stick to me way more than a plaque that I got or, you know, something like that. Those plaques are great. I love the pats on the back, you know, those kind of things. The attaboys are wonderful. But, you know, when you've taken something that you've spent your life doing and you've made a difference in someone's life like that, and I'm seeing that even now with my clients as I implement something and we get a story back of that child, you know, that had reading difficulties and they thought he was dyslexic or whatever. And it was really just an eye teaming problem. And, you know, one of my providers was able to fix it because I was able to get that child in to their office, you know. So as a consultant now, you got to change your mindset. It's not about personal achievements anymore. It's about the good of the companies that you're working with and what they're going to do, because you get paid for what you're doing. And so you have to take that personal achievement type of things from what the others are able to do. And that's something that's hard, you know, if you're used to having the personal pats on the back all the time, it does change as you go up, you know, as you climb that ladder. There's not as many people to pat you on the back anymore. So it's really more about what your team is doing. And servant leadership is something that, you know, I learned early on and tried to take. If I could make my team better, that reflected on me. And I worked for them, not them working for me. So I know that doesn't completely answer your question, but that's about the best I got, I think.
It's pretty deep. And I think that a lot of the listeners that are going to hear this are going to have to take some time to reflect, because I find that, you know, initially when we started in our careers, it's all about us. But the more seasoned we become, we recognize it was never about us. It's always about, you know, your patients and the people that you take care about. Chad, you've been an outstanding guest, man. I just can't thank you enough for being on the show. If people want to reach out and talk to you more or learn more about you, like, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's been way too long since we've talked. So this has been wonderful for me from a personal level. The easiest is probably to email me. I mean, that's the easiest by far. And So Chad, C-H-A-D, at D-R-O-V-E-R-M-A-N, Dr. Overman, LLC.com. And as you know, Iqbal, if you email me, that's where I live. So, you know, I will get back to you. I enjoy all questions, conversations. You know, I many times have been the point of the spear on some things that people aren't happy about. So I get to hear about that too. But I love spending time. You know, I don't know if most of your listeners are newer grads or earlier in their career, but I mean, I'm happy to, I know a lot of people, I guess, from a consultant standpoint, you meet a lot of people. And so I'm not saying that I can only take on so many mentees, you know, at one time, but I certainly can direct people. But just conversations are great, you know, reach out there, feel free. I'm happy to chat.
Excellent. Thanks again, Chad. I really appreciate it. And listeners, go reach out to Chad when you can.
All right. Thanks, Iqbal.
Chad's insights into the optometric industry reveal why there is a growing need for more licensed optometrists, particularly in rural parts of the country. Having an eye exam performed twice a year can help detect certain diseases early, leading to better treatment options and better clinical outcomes. When it comes to advancing his career, Chad's three-part recipe of building relationships, differentiating yourself, and failing frequently are key reminders that taking risks doesn't mean doing it alone. Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more incredible interviews. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter, and let me know what your thoughts are. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare executives advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another exciting episode. But until then, let's keep working together to take healthcare to a higher level.